cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the practical business section of our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Hi, Richard.
Last week we chatted to Matt Clark, founder of The Virtual Edge, about his experiences as an entrepreneur in the world of business communication and interaction. Today our guest in studio is Tim Jordan, Managing Director of JPAC, a company specializing in quality control equipment that's been around for 40 years. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, Richard. Great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. Also staying on from our previous segment is Silet Lanikak. She's stayed with us. And we're going to be chatting about JPAC and the world of JPAC. So, Tim, tell us about JPAC. Where did it start? And tell us about the company. It's 40 years ago. I know it's a long time.
My father started the company in the mid-70s, basically walking from business to business in the middle of Joburg, looking for servicing work. And we started the manufacturing side, doing some tooling, change parts for the food and pharmaceutical industry. It grew into a manufacturing concern of five people, where we were making some quality tooling for the big pharmaceutical companies. At that time, we went over to a couple of exhibitions over in Europe as well and saw some packaging equipment that was potentially saleable in South Africa as well. So we started importing some equipment as well as doing the manufacturing. That was in the 80s. Getting into the mid-90s, we saw an opportunity where a lot of the quality control equipment that was being used on the production lines wasn't up to standard and wasn't giving the manufacturers what they wanted out of the production lines. The sell-by date, best before legislation came into place. We saw an opportunity to sell printers for the packaging equipment, and this made us, or helped us, look for other opportunities in quality control on production lines. So metal detectors, check weighing systems, x-ray systems, all the quality control equipment that you'd use to make sure that the products aren't contaminated, they're meeting weight legislation, and they've got best before and sell by date coding on it. So that's where the business went into, and that was in the mid-90s. And over the next 15 years, it evolved where the manufacturing side became secondary and the quality control side really took off, that we expanded. I was living in Joburg. I moved down to Cape Town, opened up an office there for the business, employed one of my clients to open up an office in Port Elizabeth. And at the same time, my father was opening up an office down in Durban. So we went from a five-man business in Germiston to a multiple office business, national business, covering the whole of South Africa. So it's been a 40-year journey with ups and downs, and cash flow has been something that you really have to look after.
So having listened to the early segment of the show, and we're going to...
I think the biggest thing there is you know, the investment that you have to make back into the business, and how you control that, and the cycles that you go through where you have money available, and you need to invest in extra personnel to grow the business, but you might invest in the wrong people, and it's money down the drain. Suddenly you have to shrink the business back down to a manageable state and then start the whole cycle all over again. So yeah, it's been quite a journey, but we're on the up and up, and it's actually, we're in a positive space at the moment. We're actually in a very positive space.
Yeah. And I was going to say, after 40 years in a business, there's not many companies that have that, let me call it, intergenerational environment. I mean, it started with your dad, it's passed to you. You know, that transition in and of itself is often challenging.
We've had 11 family members in the business over the years. I'm now the only one in the business. People have gone their different ways into different aspects of life, and it's changed. You know, family business is a tough place to be. There's two big components in a business that you have to manage really seriously, and that's the emotional side of the business, and it's the practical side of the business, the logical side. And when you're dealing with a family business, the emotional side is big. It really does So it's if you're not managing the performance correctly, then the emotional side of the business takes over, and then suddenly there's all hell to play when things start going wrong, and it's emotional. So that's been a big thing that we've learned over the years on how to manage and rather base the business on performance criteria than on relationships within the business itself.
Yeah.
Obviously, the relationships are very important, but if you've got the performance right, then the motivation is there, and then the relationships can be built on top of the performance and not the other way around. A lot of people get it wrong in business, where they build relationships and then they put performance on top of that. And then suddenly it's, oh, well, I don't hurt the person's feelings, but they're not doing very well. Instead of being, guys, get your act together. Okay, we'll go for a beer afterwards. So it's getting everything in the right order. And I think that's been the big lessons that we've learned over the years on in a business and running a medium-sized business.
Yeah. I want to pause for a moment and just take us to Tim Jordan as the entrepreneur, the guy who's gone through this journey. Obviously, you know, you started working with your dad in the business. Just give us a little bit more of insight into who you as a person and what your journey as an entrepreneur has been like.
I was never an academic. Okay, always practical. So school was never my big thing. So I didn't get a matric. I had a bit of a thing at school where in my matric year I actually left. And joined JPAC, joined the company, and did an apprenticeship as a tool and die maker. And at the same time, went to a technical college to learn about electronics. So I was learning two aspects of the business in tandem. And at the same time, very fortunate that when we did import any packaging machinery, I went overseas and built that machines. So it was all very practical knowledge. But at the same time, I
would say you were probably better educated than many of the matrics of today, but let's not go there.
So I was fortunate in that sense that because at that stage there was only the five of us in the business. It was my mom, my sister, my father, a toolmaker, and myself and a welder. So it was all hands-on. So you got to know all different aspects of the business, the finance side. You got to know the servicing side. You've got to remember, back in the kind of the early 80s, we were dealing with telex machines. And when we sent a quote out, we sent it out by snail mail. Okay, we actually typed it on typewriters. Okay, so the technological advancements that we've seen over the past 40 years have been mind-boggling.
I must just pause at this point, because I've heard Tim say this before. I know in the business when something goes wrong with the IT, I've heard you say the words, "Well, everybody, if the system's down, where's your typewriter?" the good old manual systems. But we laugh about it, but the reality was that we were able to do business then in that format, and it worked.
It was getting it right first time.
Yeah.
Every single time. You couldn't make a mistake, because if you made a mistake on a quote, you had to take that piece of paper, scrap it, and redo the whole quotation. You couldn't just do a spell check. That was it. You had to know every single word, every single letter, every single comma, and full stop was in exactly the right place.
And there wasn't a little red line underneath the word to tell you it's a problem. There's a problem. No. Oh, I tell you. I always, whenever I'm standing somewhere and I write something on a board, I always say to people, the spelling is perfectly correct unless there's a little red line underneath it. But I mean, I think we have become, and to your point of, you know, education levels, I mean, today the reality is, and we talked about, I think it was General Electric was trying to find some staff.
And matriculants.
They were looking for matriculant level people in the States. And they interviewed a whole lot of people, and I think it was something like only 15% of the people could pass basic numeracy and literacy issues.
For your blue-collar roles, yeah.
Yeah, for blue-collar roles.
So they had to go to university first.
It was like, you need a university degree to be able to spell and add 1 + 1?
I have a university degree. I can't spell.
I think the biggest thing that's changed over the years is the cell phones. They've made, you know, the WhatsApp texting. has just become the norm that people are actually using that as normal language. Yeah. Hmm. So when you go to type something out or read something and it's in WhatsApp language, if you're old school, you have a hissy fit about it. I mean, you go, it's ballistic.
I must make a confession. I found myself today actually sending an email to one of my colleagues or a group of people at a company, and I started it with a hi, and then, and I don't know why I did this, but it just shows you that, you know, Twitter has really got to me. I then went at so-and-so, and I told them what I needed them to do, and then the next line, at somebody else that was included in this thing, such and such and such, and I hit send, and then I looked at this and thought, oh, Richard, that's really bad email etiquette. Like, where did that come from? You know, you're like, no, you're not thinking. So you're at this, at that, mm. you know. And I think things like WhatsApp just take you to that level where you're so used to going at this one, at that one, Twitter at this, at that, and bang, and off you go.
So I think one of the things that has happened because of that is that, if I refer back to 20, 30 years ago, you know, when somebody would say, "Look, the check's in the post," if the money didn't arrive. You used to get in your car, go to the client, and wait until they actually gave you the money or the check. Whereas nowadays, you'll find that people, they'll put it onto the spreadsheet, checks in the post, or money's on its way at the end of the month, not realizing that that money is what is needed to pay the salaries. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's, yeah.
Yeah. You got a real issue. 25th of the month rolls by, and now there's an issue. Yeah. Now, I know because I've heard Tim use this expression before, and I want to share this one because this is an absolute gem of how to do debtors collection. So I'd like you to evaluate Tim's call to Richard to collect money that I owe him. Tim, why don't you just call me and ask for some let's say I owe JPAC 15,000 Rand and it's been outstanding for 45 days.
Yeah, so a typical one that I would do is go through to the accounts department and say to the person, look, you owe us this 15,000 Rand. I would say, you do realize you're stealing our money.
Wow.
The automatic response is, sorry, what are you talking about? Say, no, you've had the money in your bank account. That's my interest. That's my money. I have given you my products. You're sitting with my products and my money. You're stealing my money. That's the bottom line.
And you held on to your customers.
And they feel very embarrassed about it because it's the truth. And it's as simple as that.
And I mean, the first time I heard this, Tim saying this to somebody, I was like, okay, that's different. And you know, the comment, my money is in your bank account and it should be in mine. Well, actually, that's 100% true. Isn't it? That's the whole point. And often I think we are too blasé in the working capital cycle of saying, you know, we'll be very hard on our suppliers. We expect our deliveries to happen. We expect the stuff to be on spec. We expect. But then when the table kind of turns, or the wheel turns of the working capital cycle, and now the money is sitting with our customer, then we're like, oh, well, you know, should we really ask them to pay us? And I'm like, absolutely. Yeah.
I think the big
absolutely.
Thing is, it's that whole thing. One of the talks I went to, and it's in the books, win-win or no deal. You don't want to be in a win-lose situation or lose-win because it becomes a lose-lose. And the win-win situation is, I will be supplying you products and you give me money.
Yeah.
Now suddenly they've got the products and they've got the money. That isn't a win-win situation. That is actually a lose-win, where they're winning and you're losing. So it should be win-win or no deal. And that's the only contract that you should put in place. And if you've got that contract, you can take that to the people and say to your client and say to them, look, we had a win-win. It went wrong. The reason why it went wrong was because you're not paying me my money. So now you owe me the money. Pay. And I think that that's – you've got to be that hard with the clients because it was win-win.
So Tim, just to clarify, you still do this even yes. though you've got this accounts team?
Yeah, very much so. No. It's yeah, the hands-on with the business. And I think this is the whole thing with any business, whether you are a 200,000 rand business or a multi-million rand business. Yeah. Everybody should know how to do everything within the business. Whether it's stock control, whether it's accounts, whether it's sales, whether it's servicing, the more cross-pollination you've got of skills within a business, even if it's a 50, 60, 100-man business, the better clarity you're going to have of people wanting to actually help each other do their jobs properly. Mm. You know, our Johannesburg branch, we had a meeting the other day about collecting money, okay? And I said to them, look, you are a team. All of you, you might have serviced one client, but all of you were servicing that client because you were all representing JPAC. It's not just one person. It's not just John doing JPAC. Mm-hmm. It's all of you are seen as JPAC. Therefore, get together and do all the work together. Help each other. Collect the money. It's not accounts department to collect the money. You guys did the work. Go and collect the money as well. Get the relationships going with those clients.
Mm. And I think that's so important because often I hear in conversations, people will say, no, it's the debtors department. They're responsible for collecting the money. And it's not. The salesperson or accounts person holds that relationship with the people. You know, it's the, when it comes to the collecting the money, it's two strangers sitting in two different offices trying to speak to each other and collect money. And it doesn't make sense. It's whomever's got the relationship with your client that's so important.
Sure.
Yeah. And they've got to be involved in the process. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Well, I think the worst debtor collection scenarios I've ever seen are where you're trying to collect cash from large multinationals with their service center in Bangalore or wherever. And, I mean, you're just kind of going, you know, this is just so difficult to make it happen because relationships do count when it comes to collecting out, et cetera. Now, Tim, I mean, growing JPAC, you talked about getting bigger, then working through challenges, shrinking back to the core, growing again. I mean, you've done some interesting things in the last little while in terms of growing the business.
So one thing I realized when I moved to Cape Town, because there we had no footprint whatsoever. Mm. Moved down to Cape Town and just going from door to door and actually getting some servicing work, selling some machines. And it made me realize that the way that you grow a business is by generating invoices. So in my mind, it's always been invoice generating personnel and non-invoice generating personnel. And so what we did, the way that we did it is, first of all, we had myself generating invoices. Then I employed somebody else, another service person, to help generate invoices. But we were doing the admin as well. And only when the two of us couldn't cope with what we were doing, did we employ an admin person, but at the same time, another invoice generating person. So that we were always looking at generating more invoices than we were non-invoice generating. Mm. And we did the same thing in the next office down in Port Elizabeth, and we did the same thing in Durban as well. So I was looking at how you can stay ahead of the curve to make sure you're always employing more invoice generating people than non-invoice generating people. Get the systems right in the business that support the sales and the servicing. That's where we are at now, is don't let the accounts department run the company. Hmm. Let the sales and the servicing, let the invoices run the company. And the other thing as well is looking at salespeople by nature are pretty lazy. They will go to where they are happy, and they will go to companies that they are comfortable going to. And over the years, we've really tried to change their habits on how they work. It doesn't happen. So what we've done is we've looked at, and we're actually implementing a telemarketing team where we tell them where to go and look for work and where find the qualified leads and then pass the qualified leads on to the sales guys. So now we're showing the sales guys where they can go and find money. You know, fish where the fish are. It's the same thing. It's that whole... that whole saying is, what's the most important when you go fishing? Fish where the fish are. It's no good having a fishing rod. It's no good having a lake and there's no fish in it. You've got to fish where the fish are. So that's where we are growing our business. And I think the big thing there is efficiencies. It's don't go to an area and do cold calling. That's old school. Rather qualify everything and make sure that everybody knows where the fish are, where the money is.
Mm. And I think that's a very, very, very important element of any business, is making sure that you know what your critical levers are, and what lever you're going to pull to actually get the sales to happen. I like your – there's a very important ratio there, and Solette loves ratios, so I'm going to focus on this, is that 3-to-1 invoice generating versus, let's call it administration, because there are a few rules in business that seem to almost be unwritten, that seem to apply no matter what business you're in.
Yeah.
The one rule that I've always observed is if you take the cost of a person's salary, the true cost of the person is actually twice that.
Mm.
When you add in all the other benefits and the costs of housing them and desks and rental and all the rest. And if you just want to know what your cost base looks like, take your total payroll number, multiply by 2, and invariably you'll find that now covers the rest of your, other than things like marketing, you know, which are, let's call it, externally driven. But if you look at your, let's call it, holistically internal costs, for some reason, that relationship just always seems to be around. And I think the 3 invoice generators to the one administration person seems to be a pretty golden rule around successful businesses. And businesses where that ratio starts dropping below that level, you start seeing some pressure into the system. And guys that get that right, numbers seem to fly. Now, Tim, I mean, working capital within your business, we were talking working capital earlier.
Yeah.
Being an importer of equipment from overseas, you're dealing with all of the challenges of a long import cycle, foreign exchange, high inventory levels. How's that been for the business? Talk to us a little bit about that inventory and that working capital management cycle for the business.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Where we are right now currently, we're trying to hold on to rands as long as possible before we pay suppliers, especially our international suppliers, because obviously with the rand strengthening against the major currencies, we're getting more dollars, euros, or pounds to the rand. Mm-hmm. Whereas a year ago, 18 months ago, it was totally the way around. We were trying to get rid of our rands as soon as possible because every week, the rand was weakening against the international currencies. Where the balancing act comes is, and is that communications, is making sure you understand what terms, what are payment terms you can work with that's going to make you a viable entity. If you've got money in the bank, there's a good chance that if you've got cash in the bank, there's a good chance it's actually the wrong thing to do. Because money in the bank isn't going to get you anywhere. It's actually losing money with the inflation rate. You leave 10 rand in the bank, by the end of the year, it's only worth 6 rand.
Yeah.
So it's just not worth keeping cash. It's getting rid of that cash, but in the right areas. If you're going to buy stock, it's a matter of what stock to buy. Are you going to move fast-moving stock, slow-moving stock? What are critical spares, that type of thing? So it's a matter of looking at where you need to invest the money. What we are doing at the moment is our investment isn't necessarily in stock or in material assets. It's looking at what personnel we need to take on board to actually grow that. So it's a matter of using that cash, because salaries is cash, is saying, right, we need more invoice generating personnel. Therefore, we can use that cash to employ more people to generate more invoices. If we can generate more invoices, it's more of a long-term 3-month to 6-month rather than just you're going to get rid of it at the end of this month. But if you can use that money to generate more invoices, then you're going in the right direction. And you've got to collect that money. I can't stress how critical it is to collect that money on time and be brutal about putting clients on stop. Because, like I said, win-win or no deal. That's basically what it boils down to.
That's a brilliant saying, win-win or no deal. So, Tim, final question to you. What do you wish you knew when you started out? So, if you had been listening, say, let's go back 15, 20 years, and you'd been listening to the radio, and you heard somebody on a show talking about business, and you think back now and you go, oh, if I had heard that from that person back then, I wouldn't have made some of the mistakes I've perhaps made or experienced some of the challenges I've had. What is that one thing that you can think of and say, hey, I would have liked to have heard the following thing that I've learned now in my own business? This is a little bit of an opportunity to pay it forward, so to speak.
Yeah. Leave the emotion out of business. It's all about performance.
Yeah.
Put your performance when you employ somebody. Make sure you've got your performance criteria in place, because the emotion can come afterwards. You can build onto that afterwards. But your performance, if you've got the performance criteria in place, you can have the relationships and the motivation afterwards. But if you go into a business and you want to go in there and have relationships, performance isn't going to build on it.
Exactly.
You've got to have the performance as your foundation, because on top of that, the personal relationships are the bonus. I've always said, and I say it to quite a few of the guys in the business, people in the business, if you were walking down the street and you weren't working at the same company as this person, would you have greeted them? So now, why do you want to greet them when you're working in the same office? Purely because you've got contracts with the same company. So you leave the relationships out of it and do the performance. Then build the relationship on top of it. But remember, the performance is the foundation.
Performance is the foundation. Tim, if people want to get hold of you at JPAC, how do we get hold of JPAC?
So here's a little gem for you. I saw an advert from one of the insurance companies. And when I go out with the sales guys, I tell this to the clients as well, because they ask me for my business card. And I say, I actually don't hand out a business card, because I'm like the insurance advert where the guy's blending in, he's camouflaged against the wall, and something goes wrong. And then he comes out and he fixes the TV or he fixes the car, and then he disappears again. Well, I'm that disappearing guy that goes and stands in the background. I come in, I fix everything, and then I disappear back again. So I don't normally hand out my business card, but yes, I'm available at tim@jpac.co.za. Through the website, www.jpac.co.za. There's an 0861 number on there that comes directly to my phone. It's a primary number that the clients, prospective clients, and anybody who needs to get hold of anybody in JPAC, it goes directly to my cell phone.
Okay, that's really interesting. An MD that has the 0861 number of the company coming to him personally. Yeah. It's really impressive. Well, thank you, Tim. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Really appreciate the time being with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And Celeste, thank you for staying on and spending time with us. Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform. CliffCentral.com.